It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting on Signal Hill in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 39 degrees out at the airport. They have northwest winds to 6 miles per hour. And they're now calling for just a 20% chance of rain for the rest of the day. Mostly cloudy skies for sure, and a high near 44. Rain is likely for tomorrow too, mainly after 1 a.m. Or tonight, rather. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 38. Southeast winds to 20, gusting as high as 25 tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, federal regulators might be close to approving a Pfizer vaccine for kids 5 and up. We hear how Alaska is getting ready. The First Alaskans Institute hosted a virtual discussion on healing for Indigenous Peoples Day. And the state's education department is calling the lack of teachers in Alaska an emergency issue. And we hear about how they're going to tackle retention. That plus more on Willow after this.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. This hour, the U.S. House is deciding whether to hold Steve Bannon in contempt of Congress. The ex-advisor and longtime ally to former President Donald Trump is defying a subpoena from the House Select Committee investigating the pro-Trump insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Bannon's attorney cited Trump's intent to invoke executive privilege. The ranking Republican on the committee, Representative Liz Cheney, is one of the few in her party to publicly criticize Trump at the risk of losing Republican votes. She says Bannon has key information about what Trump knew in the run-up to the January 6th riot that endangered the lives of members of Congress and their staff.
Mr. Bannon's own public statements make clear he knew what was going to happen before it did. And thus, he must have been aware of and may well have been involved in the planning of everything that played out on that day.
Many more congressional Republicans, such as Trump loyalist Jim Jordan, dismiss the investigation as Democratic theatrics. Should the full House vote to hold Bannon in contempt, a legal battle could play out well beyond the 2022 elections when the GOP hopes to win back control of the House. President Biden says the battle over voting rights is far from over. NPR's Aisha Roscoe reports Biden's remarks come after Republicans blocked a key voting rights bill.
President Biden says that voting is a, quote, threshold liberty for democracy. He said Republican-led states are threatening that right by enacting new restrictions on voting. Biden blamed Senate Republicans for the lack of progress on federal legislation.
They're afraid to even just debate the bills in the U.S. Senate, as they did again yesterday, even on a bill that includes provisions that they've traditionally supported. It's unfair, it's unconscionable, and it's un-American.
Republican lawmakers have argued that the Democrats' proposals amount to a federal power grab. Aisha Roscoe, NPR News, the White House.
The Federal Reserve is imposing new restrictions on trading activity by board members and senior staffers. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the move follows controversy over trades made while the central bank was actively involved in financial markets.
The new rules prohibit trading of individual stocks and bonds and require that any investment be held for at least a year. Federal Reserve policymakers and senior staff will also have to get advanced approval before buying or selling mutual funds, and leaders of the Fed's regional banks will have to report transactions within 30 days. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says in a statement the new rules are intended to offer reassurance that policymakers are focused only on the central bank's public mission. Active trading of individual stocks and securities by two regional Fed bank presidents last year drew criticism. Both men have since retired. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 6 points, 35,603, just before the close. The NASDAQ was up 94 points and the S&P was up 13. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Federal regulators could approve the Pfizer COVID vaccine for kids ages 5 to 11 in a few short weeks. and the Biden administration announced on Wednesday it will have enough shots for every eligible child in the country. The state of Alaska is working on a plan to make sure kids can get vaccinated as soon as possible. State of Alaska Immunization Program Manager Matthew Bobo says the Pfizer vaccine for children has the same ingredients as the adult version, though the dose is smaller and it comes in a different vial. He says the state already knows what its initial allocation will be for the kid-sized vaccines.
We have received 33,000 doses. So that's enough doses to vaccinate approximately 44% of Alaska's 5 through 11-year-olds.
And that's just the first allocation. Bobo says the state expects to receive more in the weeks following those first shipments. In the meantime, he says the state is working with healthcare providers to get them to order the pediatric vaccine so they'll already have it when it's approved for use in children. Bobo acknowledges there might be some hesitancy about giving kids a COVID-19 vaccine, and he encourages anyone with questions to seek out reliable information about its safety and efficacy. Bobo says most kids are familiar with getting vaccines, like the ones that prevent measles and have all but eradicated polio.
And we hear a lot of anecdotes about children really encouraging their parents to get vaccinated. So I think there seems to be more acceptance in this group.
As for the previous group of children approved for the vaccine, those ages 12 to 18, Bobo says in Alaska, a little over 51% have received at least one shot, and about 45% are considered fully vaccinated. Government and church-run boarding schools took the lives of many Indigenous young people, while many survivors followed challenging paths to overcome an experience described as cultural genocide. On Indigenous Peoples Day, the First Alaskans Institute hosted a virtual discussion on healing. KUAC's Mary Auld has this report.
Alaska Native elders who survived attending boarding schools spoke for over 2 hours about their experiences with healing on a public Zoom call. Most of the speakers wore orange shirts in a nod to residential school survivor Phyllis Webstad, whose new orange shirt was taken from her when she arrived at a boarding school in British Columbia. President and CEO of First Alaskans Institute, Lagunai Medicine Crow, is Haida Nlingit. She introduced the event, which she said was intended to facilitate healing for those affected.
People are not alone in this journey. And as more and more of these truths come forward, we don't want people to feel like they don't have a touchstone or an anchor to the goodness and to the healing that comes.
From the late 19th century through the early 1980s, Alaska Native children and Indigenous children across North America were removed from their homes and taken to schools run by the federal government and churches. Jim LaBelle is Inupiaq and attended Wrangell Institute, run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, starting when he was 6 years old. He shared his experiences being abused by staff at the school. He said he got sick because he was forced to eat Western foods his body wasn't used to. The school prevented him from communicating with his family. He said the trauma he endured has impacted much of his life, particularly his role as a father.
I saw this violence almost on a daily basis. And it was kind of like learned behavior in some ways. I didn't know how to be parents to my own children because I had no role models.
Another survivor, Liz Sunnyboy, is Yupik. She described what it was like when she was taken to St. Mary's Mission School as a young child.
The most loneliest, scariest, feeling lost because I didn't know how to speak English yet. If we spoke, we got punished for speaking. I'm even cold right now in telling the story.
Sunnyboy said forgiving the people who mistreated her at the mission was part of the way she healed.
I had to forgive them in order to not to go crazy over what happened. And I had to thank him for the education I received because I was able to further my education later on. But I had to work through healing also afterwards.
Otna Elder Fred John Jr. read a reflection he wrote about his experience at Wrangell. He described the shame and self-hatred the boarding schools instilled in him and the way his own children helped him to heal. His statement concluded,
"This is who I was, who I became, and who I am today. I am Fred John Jr. I am no longer scared. I have regained my voice. I'm going to share my story."
Hundreds of people commented on and shared the video on Facebook. The full video is available on the First Alaskans Institute Facebook page and website. The pages also include a full list of support resources for people harmed by boarding schools. For KUAC, I'm Mary Auld.
The Juneau Board of Education adopted a land acknowledgement during its meeting Tuesday night. It will be used during all future meetings of that board. The acknowledgement is intended to express appreciation and celebrate the context of the Indigenous presence and history in the community. The board had tried to settle on the language during its September 14th meeting, but a member of the public, IU Kwasuktok, raised some concerns during the meeting. She referenced a portion of the initial language that said, quote, "We are grateful to have been welcomed to be in this place," close quote. She said it struck her because it seemed to center on a settler's perspective instead of an Indigenous perspective.
"Though unintentional, I feel like it could potentially contribute to erasure of the history of how the education system came to be in the community. It was not necessarily a welcoming but an imposition."
So the language was sent back to the policy committee in September and a final reading was presented Tuesday. That portion was swapped out to, quote, "We are grateful to be a part of this community," close quote. At the end of this week's meeting, newly sworn in member Amber Fromhers said she appreciated the land acknowledgement.
"I think that is timely, better late than never, and that means a lot that we were able to move that."
The board's action comes several months after the Juneau Assembly formalized its own land acknowledgement. The state's education department calls the lack of teachers in Alaska an emergency issue and says the pandemic is only making things worse. It's willing to pay up to $300,000 to figure out how to attract and keep more teachers in the state. Teachers and unions support the move, but as Claire Strimple reports for KTOO, they say the number one reason they're leaving is pretty obvious.
James Harris is Alaska's 2017 Teacher of the Year, and he doesn't live or teach here anymore.
"I'm teaching in just outside of Seattle, Washington, and I've been down here for a few years."
He says there's more than one reason he moved.
"The number one reason was the retirement. The retirement system in Alaska, it was set up in a way that there was just absolutely no way for me to retire with any kind of dignity."
Harris began teaching in Alaska in 2006, the first year after the state's legislature cut teacher pensions, known as defined benefits. Experts say Alaska is the only state that doesn't offer teachers a pension or Social Security benefits. Teacher turnover has hovered above 20% for the last decade. That puts Harris among the 1 in 5 teachers that leaves each year. He said he hoped state leaders would provide funding for education and educators, but eventually decided he couldn't wait any longer and moved south with his family.
The loss of the defined benefits plan is the single biggest reason I see that we lose teachers.
Corrine Marks has been teaching in Alaska for 25 years. She teaches high school English in Juneau and trains teachers-to-be at the University of Alaska Southeast. She has about 30 people in the program right now. Teachers from Alaska are more likely to stay here, but she still sees turnover.
"I've had more teachers come and go just here in Juneau, which is an easy place to stay comparatively, right? Because they have nothing holding them here.
Marx plans to retire here so she can collect her pension, those defined benefits teachers don't get anymore. It's guaranteed income after she retires. New teachers do get retirement benefits in Alaska. They just aren't pensions. They usually come in the form of contributions to a retirement account. But after teaching for 5 years, Alaska teachers can take their retirement accounts with them if they leave. Union leaders say that leads to teacher tourism, where out-of-state teachers have a 5-year Alaska adventure and then take their experience home for the rest of their career, after Alaska has invested in training them.
I've been working on the pensions issue since the state legislature first ruined it in 2005.
State Senator Jesse Kiel says dropping the pension was a mistake that's losing the state money and talent. One study estimates Alaska spends $20 million on teacher turnover each year. He's supportive of the state's effort and says legislature bears some of the blame for turnover. It's up to them to fund education, but they haven't increased funding for more than 5 years. That puts stress on the whole system. Kiel introduced a bill this year that brings back the opportunity for teachers to earn a pension. Not a big one, he said, but it's an incentive to keep families in Alaska.
By doing away with the pension, we have created a system where the rational economic choice for a teacher with 5 years experience is to leave. Is that really the system we want?
So far, it's the system Alaska's been choosing. But this year, the Education Department is investing in someone to lead the state towards a solution to the broader problem of attracting and keeping teachers.
This is not a problem that we can solve by ourselves.
Commissioner Michael Johnson heads the Department of Education and Early Development.
The department can't solve it. Not one entity can solve it. Not one district, not the legislature, not the governor. All of us have to work together.
He agrees pensions and pay are among the biggest issues, but says there's more than one challenge to attracting and retaining teachers in Alaska. Research bears this out. A working group identified 6 aspects the state should address, things like working conditions and developing leadership.
I think bottom line for me is that we take this report, we take this work from the task force, and then we do something.
Applications for the job closed last week. The state refused to say how many applicants submitted a proposal. The state plans to issue a contract by November 1st. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
On Wednesday, the 4,000-passenger Norwegian Encore became the last big cruise ship to dock in Juneau for the year. Until midsummer, it was unclear if there were going to be any big ships visiting southeast Alaska. The Canadian border was still closed in July, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention still had restrictions on cruise ships and their passengers. But cruising resumed in late July, and downtown Juneau sprang back into life after a virtually non-existent 2020 season. Most cruise ship passengers were required to be vaccinated prior to the start of their trips. More than 70 large ships and 20 small ships docked in Juneau during the shortened season, bringing over 123,000 people to town. That's less than 10% of the number of passengers that came during 2019, the last season before the pandemic. A national voting reform bill stalled in the U.S. Senate on Wednesday. Alaska's senators, like all Republicans, voted against the proceeding on the Freedom to Vote bill. It sets minimum standards for early voting and voting by mail and creates new financial disclosure requirements for groups that spend money to influence elections. To boost turnout, it would also make Election Day a federal holiday. Democrats say the bill is necessary to counter efforts in Republican jurisdictions that they say will make it harder to vote, particularly for young people, the poor, and others who have to move often. Senator Lisa Murkowski has for years been the only Republican to co-sponsor the Voting Rights Advancement Act. It would restore parts of a civil rights-era voting law that were nullified by Supreme Court decisions. But Murkowski says the Freedom to Vote bill is partisan and an attempt to micromanage state elections. Democratic leaders in the Senate say they aren't done trying to pass a bill to protect access to the polls. Conservation groups are cheering the Biden administration's decision not to appeal a judgment that reversed approval for Willow. That's a ConocoPhillips plan to develop 5 drilling sites in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason ruled in August that the Trump administration didn't adequately consider greenhouse gas emissions or the impact on polar bears when it approved the plan. The Biden administration initially defended the Willow approval, but Tuesday was the deadline for an appeal, and the government didn't file one. Jeremy Lieb is an attorney for Earth Justice, one of the groups involved in the legal challenge. He says Willow doesn't fit with the Biden administration's agenda to fight climate change.
We're pleased to see that the administration has recognized that at this point and is not continuing to defend the plan in court on appeal.
Willow is a big priority for Senator Lisa Murkowski. The Biden administration's initial defense of the project could be seen as an overture to her as one of the few Senate Republicans who might vote for some of Biden's priorities. Interior Department spokeswoman Melissa Schwartz didn't say why the government didn't file an appeal, just that the matter is back in front of the Bureau of Land Management, which is reviewing it to determine the next steps. If the BLM decides to do another environmental review to comply with the judge's order, environmental groups hope the agency scraps the project or imposes more restrictions. ConocoPhillips did not respond in time to be included in this story.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Seafood sales continue to soar at U.S. retail stores. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
Seafood sales spiked at retail stores during the first 3 quarters of 2021 with no slowdown in sight. It's a trend that picked up steam at the onset of the COVID pandemic when more Americans turned to seafood for its healthier benefits. When compared to the pre-pandemic 2019 levels, all 3 areas of fresh, frozen, and shelf-stable seafoods easily trended ahead. National market trackers say that 36% of Americans are eating more seafood in place of meat, and 2/3 are looking for more recipes and new products to help them do so. Seafood Source News reports that fresh and frozen seafood sales reached nearly $5.5 billion from January through September. And it appears that the industry's longtime efforts to convince Americans that the quality of frozen seafood is as good or better than fresh is finally paying off, especially with a majority of younger buyers. Of all frozen protein offerings, seafood was by far the largest category, with sales reaching $533 million just in September. And 3/4 of consumers said they eat seafood at home or away from home at least once a month, and 46% eat it at least weekly. Only 12% of consumers say they never eat seafood. 4 in 10 make a significant effort to choose sustainable seafood, but while wild-caught remains the most important at 36%, preference for farm-raised is on the rise at 29%. Sales of farmed seafood grew almost 19% from January through May of this year, likely reflecting the fact that over 80% of America's seafood is imported from elsewhere. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 21st day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:59, not quite 9 o'clock, and it will set again at 6:48. That will give us 9 hours and 49 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 50 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 54 degrees set in 1936, and our record low was 16 degrees set in 1974. Currently 39 degrees out at the airport, 41 degrees on our tiny back porch behind the station. 20% chance of rain this afternoon. Mostly cloudy skies with a high near 44 and southwest winds about 5, gradually turning to the southeast. For tonight, rain is likely mainly after 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low around 38. Southeast winds 15 to 20, gusting as high as 25. And for tomorrow, rain is likely mainly before 2 p.m. Cloudy skies tomorrow too, with a high near 45. East wind 15, gusting as high as 20. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 2:57 this afternoon here on the east side, and that will be a 9.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:24 this evening of minus 4/10 of a foot. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 3:28 p.m. of 15.2 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:59, almost 10 p.m., of minus 1 foot. Looking at our marine weather, for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory through Friday, west wind to 20 knots and seas to 10 feet, except seas 15 feet south of Dangerous Cape in the morning. For tonight, southeast 30, seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, southeast 30, diminishing to 15 knots in the afternoon, seas 11 feet, building to 19 feet in the afternoon. North of Dangerous Cape, seas to 10 feet. For Friday night, east 20, seas to 20 feet. Over in the Shellcroft, small craft advisory tonight and Friday, west wind to 15 knots, becoming southeast 20 knots, seas to 5 feet this afternoon. For tonight, east wind to 30 knots, seas to 10 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shellcroft, east wind to 30 knots, seas to 9 feet. The Humane Society for Kodiak is having its annual meeting on Thursday, October 28th. That's next Thursday. That's happening 5:30 to 7 p.m. via video conference. For more information and a link to the meeting, visit Kodiak Animal Shelter, one word, .org. The next meeting of the Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will be taking place tonight at 6:30 p.m. via video conference. If you'd like to attend the meeting, please contact Mike Wall at gm@kmxt.org for link information. The public is welcome to attend. Next Tuesday, October 26th, the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center is having their annual membership meeting. All in the community are invited and welcome. Email outreach@kwrcc.org or call them at 486-6171 for information on how to attend. The Independent Living Center is having a virtual Halloween event via Zoom for people interested in recreation, leisure activities for those who experience disabilities. Come learn what's possible and tell them what kind of activities you'd like to be a part of. The event is Wednesday, October 27th, 4 to 5 p.m. Participants are encouraged to wear a Halloween costume. Email for a link and directions, or you can call Independent Living Center here in Kodiak at 907-486-0491. The Kodiak Public Library Association has two openings on their board of directors. Join them and help them continue their mission of providing support for the Kodiak Public Library. The board meets monthly. They're also looking for help constructing bases for several little libraries that they'd like to put up around town. Little libraries offer free books for anyone to encourage reading in the community. Call them at 486-6498 extension 2 if you'd like to be a part of KPLA. That's 486-6498 extension 2. The Kodiak History Museum is in the process of gathering materials for a new exhibit, Making History Day by Day, Kodiak, Our Stories, and the Kodiak-19 Pandemic. It's a reflection of the past 18 months in Kodiak. The museum would like to feature you, your voice, and your story in this telling of Kodiak's COVID-19 experience. You can contribute to the exhibit by sharing your reflections, pictures, and memes by email to curator@kodiakhistorymuseum.org, and you need to do that by October 23rd. Again, that's curator, C-U-R-A-T-O-R, @kodiakhistorymuseum.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.